Hello, welcome to episode 10 of The Northern Life. This month we're going to chat to Louise Swan about the Association of Anaesthetists and to Emma Jackson about the Intensive Care Society. But first, here are some dates and events to note. Changeover is once again looming, so make sure you've had any required end of placement meetings and sorted out any last minute paperwork before moving on. In February, the new starters course is running on a number of dates, so if you're attending, please check which date and location you've been allocated to. The first day of the two-day Paediatric Stabilisation and Retrieval course is on the 7th of February, and this is an excellent opportunity to enhance your knowledge and increase your skills in looking after the unwell child. The second day will be on the 15th of March. On the 15th of February, Anaesthetic Skills for Foundation Doctors is running, and this is ideal for any doctors who are thinking about a career in anaesthesia. Also on the 15th of February, there's a final FRCA SOE exam practice, which gives anyone preparing for the exam the opportunity to get some extra practice in under exam conditions. The Introduction to Intermediate Training Neuro Day is running on the 16th of February. Moving into March, post-fellowship teaching is on the 3rd of March and will be focused on coagulation. There are four dates for Introduction to Intermediate Training in March. On the 9th is pain, 16th is peds, the 24th cardio, and the 30th obs. The Ethical and Legal Issues Study Day runs on the 17th of March and this is open to all grades. And finally, Practical Procedures for ICM course is running on the 31st of March. As always, check out the ALAN website to book or for more information on any of these courses or for future events later in the year. This month we thought we might take a closer look at the Association of Anaesthetists and the Intensive Care Society. I'm delighted to be joined by Louise Swan to talk about the Association of Anaesthetists. Thanks very much for joining us on the Northern Line. For anyone who doesn't know you, please could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your role within the Association of Anaesthetists Trainee Committee?
Yeah, hi Sarah, and thanks for inviting me today. My name's Louise Swan, and I'm one of the ST7 dual ICM and anaesthetic trainees in the region. I was appointed to the trainee committee of the Association of Anaesthetists last summer.
Brilliant. What I thought we could talk about today is some people would have been at the Management and Professional Issues course at the beginning of December last year. But for anyone who wasn't, you gave a really interesting overview of the organisation of the Association of Anaesthetists. And there was quite a lot of things that you talked about that I thought, oh, I didn't know about this, or I'd maybe heard a little bit but wasn't aware of sort of the ins and outs, and thought it'd be really nice if you could highlight a little bit more about what the association does.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the association really does lots for its members, and also there is quite a lot of content available online for its non-members. And so it's worth going to have a look at the website. Essentially, it's there as a support group and really emphasizes well-being of anaesthetists. And whereas something, you know, the Royal College of Anaesthetists is, there's a regulatory body, you know, it's to do with our exams and works very closely with the GMC to ensure that professional standards are maintained. Whereas the Association of Anaesthetists is also very interested in patient safety, but far more from a point of view of looking after its members and its anaesthetists to enable them to do a good, safe job for patients. There are lots of different kind of facets, there's lots of subcommittees within the Association of Anaesthetists, and they'll deal with lots of different things. So there's the guidelines group, education group that, as you say, will organise a lot of the core topics and other webinars that you'll have seen from the Association of Anaesthetists, as well as the three major conferences that they organise. Then there are the environmental group, so which is actually one of the things that I have done quite a lot of work on since I joined the committee, and that's been really interesting. So that's working really closely with other members, so again, elective members, as well as the environmental fellow, who is currently Jason Gandhi at the moment, and he's been doing some great work. So I've kind of been working a little bit with him. So we've actually just edited the latest edition of Anaesthesia News that was just being released a few days ago, which is an environmental issue. As well as that, we're looking at trying to develop the travel policy at the Association of Anaesthetists to reflect thoughts on sustainability. So there's some really interesting work that's going on there. But I also sit on the group that's helping assist with the trainee conference, which is happening this summer. So that's obviously an annual thing. And actually, we work closely with the local organising group.
And because I'd done some work with the mentoring at the conference in Newcastle, I've become involved in just helping and facilitate things down in Bristol, which is where it's going to be in the summer. In addition to, you know, that there's lots of work about the political side, and a representative goes to some of the political party conferences, for instance, to try and advocate for anaesthesia within kind of politics. There's lots of campaigns that they do, such as you'll have heard of Fight Fatigue. Yes. Hopefully that lots of our consultant colleagues work really hard and continue to do so in the region with others. They do a lot of work about anti-bullying and the aging anaesthetist. Part of what the association tries to do is be the voice of the specialty. Mm. And so they do end up kind of campaigning on workforce issues as well as responding to political events and things that are happening.
I can imagine it's been a fairly busy time, what with the number of different things that have been going on over the last couple of years.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, all of these things are kind of we're aware of, and then as the association decide whether to respond and if they're going to respond, how to respond to some of these events that we'll have all seen, you know, particularly on social media recently.
So for anyone who would like to get involved, what should they be doing, or how can they get involved with the association?
There are multiple ways. You can either be involved just by using some of the support things that are available. So looking online, there's plenty of guidelines. They've got virtual learning now at Learn. So you can Google that, and there's lots of educational resources. So I guess number one would be to use it as a resource there for you and your kind of professional development and support. If you want to be further involved, they are always looking for people to suggest things. So if you have suggestions for guidelines, then you can contact the association and all the details are online. Equally, they're always looking for people to contribute to things. So as you'll know, they publish anaesthesia and then anaesthesia news, and they're always looking for submissions for those. Anaesthesia news is something that has particles in, which some trainees, I'm sure, in the region have contributed to, essentially a review of something that's happened, that's been published in any of the kind of mainstream journals about an anaesthesia related topic. And they're always looking for that. And it's a really good, relatively easy way of getting published. So if any trainees listening are interested in doing that, the details are online, or I'm very happy if somebody wants to give me an email and I can pass them on to the trainee who is involved in anaesthesia news. And then the other thing would be to actually try and, you know, do what I've done and become a member of the training committee. It's something that I've thought about doing for many years. People are probably aware of the fact that we've actually always had a quite good representative from the Northeast on the training committee. And if anyone's interested, again, feel free to get in touch. We probably will be looking for new people, obviously, as people CCT and move on to their consultant jobs. And certainly later on this year, I think there are going to be some spaces that come available. And then it's a case of being nominated and then putting out a little bit about yourself and trying to encourage people to vote.
Excellent. You've mentioned already that the trainee conference is going to be in Bristol this year.
Yeah, Tuesday the 12th of July to Thursday the 14th. So maybe opportunity to tag on some annual leave and explore Bristol. I'm very excited because I don't know Bristol very well at all. So it'll be nice to see it. The last time I went was when I was looking at applying to med school. It's a little under wraps as to what there's going to be, but I've been on a few meetings with the planning committee down there, and they have got lots of great ideas and lots of kind of local speakers and expertise. And I think that's partly why it's lovely to have the training conference in different places, because I think it makes you realise how lucky we are within the United Kingdom to have so many excellent speakers and projects that people have been involved with, and you really kind of get a flavour of what's going on in the different regions. I've been promised that there's going to be some nice social events, which hopefully are going to be less restricted by COVID.
Excellent. That sounds like it will be a great meeting.
Yeah, it looks lovely.
Good really opportunity nice. To network and socialise, and as you say, hopefully in a slightly less restricted fashion.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's obviously quite some way from Newcastle, but actually there is a direct train and also you can fly. So perhaps with my environmental sustainability hat on, that's maybe not necessarily the way to travel, but actually at least there's, plenty of options for people.
Thank you very much for coming back on again.
Thanks very much, Sarah.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Thanks, Louise. Definitely check out the Learn app as there is absolutely loads of excellent content, which is great for revision or CPD. I'm now delighted to be joined by Emma Jackson, who's going to talk to us about the Intensive Care Society. Thanks very much for joining us on the Northern Line. Do you mind telling us a little bit about yourself and your role within the Intensive Care Society?
So hi, I'm Emma. I am a single specialty intensive care trainee with an A&E background. I am just about to go back into training after having a year out to finish my final year, so I'll be an ST7. I have a specialist interest in cardiac intensive care and I work in the Northwest. I've been on the trainee advisory group since 2018, 2019. Mm-hmm. And I became the chair of the group just under 2 years ago. So I took over as COVID sort of happened. So that would be like March 2020.
Bit of a challenging introduction then to your post.
Yes, the tag had already, we were already meeting online. So that was, it was quite a natural progression for us to carry that on. But everyone was obviously very busy. The whole focus of intensive care changed, and so trying to bring everyone together during that period was quite hard, and also providing the right amount of support for trainees was also quite challenging, but I think it really helped because we elected new representations that year, and we had a really positive response. We had lots of applications and got some really great people, and we formed a really good committee and have got some really exciting things in the pipeline.
And we're going to be looking for some new committee members in the not too distant future. Can you tell us anything more about that?
Yeah, so the trainee advisory group is made up of 10 trainees. They can be anywhere in, they just need to be a trainee. So they need to be an intensive care trainee. So that's anyone from the beginning, so ST3 or applying for ICM training right through to the end. At the minute, our committee is quite top heavy. So we've got quite senior trainees. So I would encourage however junior you are to apply because we want a whole breadth of people represented on the trainee advisory group because we appreciate that training is a very changing environment at the moment, and training even from when I started, which isn't that long ago, it's 4 years ago, is very different. So we want that full breadth of experience and we want people from everywhere, so we'll be opening applications shortly, all being well, and I'd really encourage to apply because I think we're going to talk a bit more about what you can do for the ICS, and it's got a whole range of things that you can help implement.
We were elected to the training advisory group at the same time and I find it like a fabulous couple of years, and we've got involved with so many different things. Yeah. And that is kind of what we wanted to talk about today, because I feel like sometimes you don't really know what a society can offer you, and until you sort of, someone either tells you, or you look a little bit deeper, and there's so many things that the ICS do that before I joined the TAG, I didn't really know about. So I thought we could highlight that today.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. So I was very similar to you. I got involved really with ICS because I wanted to write a guideline, and that was really only scratching the surface. So the ICS is made up at the minute of five core areas, so research, standards and guidelines, education, professional affairs, public affairs, and then we have some extra areas which are being developed, so that's our equality and diversity branch and our sustainability and environmental branch. On each of those seven areas, we have a trainee representative who feeds directly into those working groups and represents the views of trainees and has a significant impact. So For instance, Sakina, one of our TAG members, sits on the Equality and Diversity Group, and she has had a big impact on the most recent development of pulse oximetry and changing the saturation level, and is working with the science people behind that, which I think when she probably joined the committee, she didn't have any idea that that would be the level at which she's working at. And I think they're not just working at a national level, they're taking that further to international. Eleanor is another one of our new committee members, raised how the ICS was going to meet its carbon neutral targets and how it was going to move forward to be a sustainable society. And that has had a direct impact on how the society has moved forward. And she chairs that with Hugh Montgomery. And so that has had a direct impact on that. JIX has now gone from being a paper-based journal to all online, which has had a huge impact on our sustainability as a society. The ICS has led on numerous wellbeing projects for not just ICS trainees, but the intensive care community as a whole. And that's been a range of things. They've done webinars, they've organised one-to-one counselling for people post-COVID, and they've got several big projects going forward, which are really going to have a positive impact on the ICM community. And we have trainees who feed into that as well directly, and feedback trainees' views and impact on that. The two people in our research division, they were directly involved in organising and running the research conference that was run with critical care and anaesthetics. And then the two people who sit on standard, so that's myself and one of the other trainees, I didn't think when I joined that I would be authoring a national guideline on, for instance, delirium, which is what I'm doing at the moment. So you have a tremendous amount of scope to impact that you probably don't appreciate when you first start.
Absolutely. There's an awful lot of opportunities out there. If we want to influence our training and influence our careers, then getting involved right from the start, I think, is brilliant. And I found everyone to be really receptive, very, very welcoming. I was a little bit intimidated, I have to say, when I first joined, but I've been given an awful lot of opportunities within education and wellbeing, and everyone's been so supportive. One of the key events that the Intensive Care Society runs every year is the State of the Art meeting, which has been a face-to-face meeting up until COVID sadly came along. And we've just had a very successful virtual conference at the end of last year. There's quite a lot of ways that trainees can get involved, and I thought we could talk a little bit about this.
I think state of the art is probably something that trainees knew was an opportunity from the ICS, but I think what I would really encourage people to do is submit. So submit to whichever category you feel, don't be intimidated, just give it a go, because we want people there. We want people to have that opportunity to talk. We want people to get their views out. And this last conference, which was virtual, we had a really strong trainee representation there, and it was fantastic. One of the trainee sessions was the most watched session of the whole conference. We had a trainee involved in at least one session every day, and the Cauldron, which is specifically for trainees, was absolutely fantastic. And I know there's a little bit of intimidation around the Cauldron and it's a Dragon's Den type thing, but this year I think we've got a really great topic. The topic is, how would you train the ICM leaders of the future? So last year we took you back to the future, and now we're asking you to take us forward. Tell us how you would train the ICM leaders of the future. There are going to be people there who have a big impact on ICM trainees of the future, who are going to listen, who are going to want to hear your ideas. So if you think you have a way of doing it better or a way of improving things, this is your chance to submit something and tell the whole world, because we have people coming from all over, how you would train ICM of the future. And this is a big opportunity, and I'd really encourage people to go for it. The other thing that we are doing as a TAG at State of the Art is MDT diaries, and that is across the whole of the ICM team, because we're very aware that the patient is the centre and they are supported by a community around them, and so we want to impact everyone. And that focuses on a day that changed your personal practice. What one event, what key thing changed how you practice as a practitioner, and can you share that with the rest of the community? We want as many different specialties to apply to that. So not just doctors, we want pharmacists, we want physios, OT, speech and language, I'm missing lots of people out here that are going to shout at me. And then the final one, which was a new session last year, which was a massive success, was the ABC of ICM. So this is a 10-minute topic that you think, ah, that's something that once it was explained to me, I got. So we are asking for a video submission of 10 minutes on that topic. Then the best 10 to 15 will be selected for you to present as a main session at State of the Art. The rest, as long as they are credible, will form a video bank, which will be available for people to watch during State of the Art, after State of the Art, and will eventually go onto the learning platform. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to.
Thanks, Emma. The deadline for submitting abstracts is the 27th of February, so there's plenty of time to get yours prepared and submitted. Thanks once again to Louise and Emma. We'll be back again next month.